Hey there, listener. I've got some rotocross dates for you for the next races coming up. The next one is the 25th in Auckland, and that's at Wailuku. That's at the train fair. So we're just racing at the field there. Head along. It's going to be an awesome event if you're in Auckland or in the surrounding areas. That race is for points, and will go towards your final points heading into Geraldine. The event after that, we're heading down to Levin, which you'll catch me at also, and that's the 3rd through to the 5th. If you've never raced the Levin event, that is probably, or arguably, the best round on the calendar during the year. Nice and central down by Wellington. Jonathan's been cranking out all sorts of crazy ideas. We've got night tracks, day tracks, tree tracks, everything you could possibly want. So head down to that. And this episode is sponsored by Quad Junkie. If you guys need any gear at all to get you ready for these races, whether it's beginner level, entry level, ESCs, flight controls, whatever, props even, they've got you covered right through from the maximum level hype right through to the beginner stuff. So head over to quadjunkie.co.nz, use the coupon code THEHYPETRAIN, and that'll get you 5% off your next order. So we thank Quad Junkie for their support. This episode is also brought to you by Race Flight. We've managed to get an awesome deal out of Race Flight. For those that don't know what Race Flight is, it's the maximum level hype you can get for your machine. They also do ESCs, flight controllers, and obviously associated flight control software. So head over to raceflight.net and use the coupon code THEHYPETRAIN, and you'll get 10% off ordering any of the gear that they've got on there. So we thank both Quad Junkie and Race Flight for your support, and use the coupon codes, you crazy fools. Now, let's get on with the episode.
All aboard the hype train!
Choo-choo, motherfucker!
And we're live with episode 10 of the Hype Train podcast with me, your host, Magnazan. Once again, I've got Steve FPV back. How you doing, Steve?
Good, good. Good evening or good morning.
Is it? It could be either, depending on where you are in the world.
Yeah.
And we've also got a special guest today. None other than Filthy FPV. How you doing?
Hey, guys. Good. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's been. I've been trying to get you. I tried to get you on a little while ago, but obviously we've had a lot of events come up and whatnot. So it's good to finally get you on. And somebody, I think you're the first person from the South Island. That'd be right.
That is correct. Yeah, there's been a lot going on lately, so it's been good.
Yeah. No, it's cool. And you're predominantly a acro flyer. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I tend to do both. I enjoy both just as much as each other, really, racing and acro.
Sweet.
Both have good
All right,
points
well,
to them.
For those that don't know who you are, just introduce yourself to us, how long you've been flying, and also, what you like doing and what your gear is and all that kind of jazz. So, go.
Okay. Sure. Filthy FPV, and I've been flying for, I don't know, a year and a half now, I think. And
Is that all?
Yeah, year and a half.
You and Douglas, eh?
Hasn't been long, eh?
No.
But we fly here pretty often, like almost every day, so we get a lot of stick time in, so really, really helps.
Who are you flying down there with? Is that Ash?
We've got quite a big crew down here in Christchurch today. We've got Ash, Shay, and a whole lot of other Christchurch guys that we tend to fly with most days. We just put a group message out, really, and head down to the red zone, meet up, and start flying. Often have a barbecue and stuff as well, as a few drinks to help out.
Cool. And for those that don't know what the red zone is in Christchurch, so Christchurch is in the South Island of New Zealand, and the whole of Christchurch got hit by two massive earthquakes, and wrecked a massive amount of area. And the red zone is the like a
swamp area.
Yeah.
Well, it's not all swamp. It's like a whole lot of residential area where the land's being damaged and they can't rebuild on at the moment. So they've demoed the houses. All the trees and stuff are still there. The roads are still there. So anyone's able to access it and go in and just do what they want there, really.
I guess the best way to describe it
without the radioactiveness.
Yeah,
Chernobyl without the radioactive, but it looks like a bit of a golf course, but just a little bit more overgrown.
It does, it's like a ghost town without any buildings. It's quite.
No, it looks. Whenever I see the videos of the stuff you've been flying around, it looks. I just want to go there because you don't have to worry about people walking around. There's no dogs. There's no.
Oh, you get occasional dog walkers going through, but.
Really?
Yeah.
Where are they living?
Oh, people like drive to the edge of the red zone and walk their dogs through it, just like a big park, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So how big is the actual red zone area?
Oh, I don't know, to be honest. It's massive. It's really big. There's a few different areas as well. It's not just one red zone. There's a few different sections that have classed as red zone.
Have you guys been exploring much or not?
Yeah. We've pretty much tried most of the places out.
Sweet.
A lot of it's all the same because it's like, the houses were there, the gardens and trees are still there, so it's just like backyard trees.
Yeah.
It's hard to find somewhere different in there, really.
Cool. So what frame do you fly? What motors do you fly? And obviously, if you've got any sponsors, that kind of stuff.
Yep, sure.
Because you and I met for the first time in Hawaii, wasn't it? Worlds.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So just tell us about that journey.
Well, first, I'm lucky enough to be sponsored by 4Rotor, and I fly their frames, which is HRC X Fighter. They're an XL frame.
Hype.
Yeah. Awesome frame.
Yeah.
Sponsored by T-Motor and Gemfan as well. So I fly, it's two setups, really. I've got a freestyle setup and a race setup. The freestyle one's a KISS setup with KISS ESC's KISS FC and T motor 2305 2400 kV motors.
What props do you run on that?
The Gemfan 50/40x3 nylons for freestyle.
Oh yeah, cool.
Yeah, all right. Super smooth, but they do snap at a look at a branch pretty much. But
but nice props. you want the video, eh? You want the smooth, jello-free video.
Right. You can't fly up in props.
No. And what's your race machine? So what have you got in there?
So at the moment I'm running the Revolt on race flight, and
hop.
Yeah, it's going pretty good actually. Yeah, I really like it for racing. Pretty much the same setup. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, what build are you running that on? What firmware for the Revolt?
Is that the Revolt one
or BB?
BB 425 at the moment.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Sweet.
That's a build I couldn't get working, but anyway.
Huh? Well, some people have issues with 425. From 413 to 425, they changed the filtering. There's no flight code changes, it's just filtering changes. So technically, you could just change the filters back to what they were in 413 and it would be exactly the same.
Interesting.
Mm.
Flew, but it had heaps of prop wash, eh?
Yeah, and that's the filtering. And I think it was mainly targeted at the Revolt, not Revo.
Okay.
Yeah, because the previous build had massively stupid defaults, which were mostly no good for anything. But they would fly pretty safely, so you wouldn't cook anything.
And I guess I have a question for you, Phil. How do you find like the stick feel compared to the way the quad actually behaves compared to KISS and race flight?
Sure. There's definitely a massive difference that I've found. Like, I still prefer KISS for freestyle, and it's mainly because of the rates. I played with the race flight Revolt and tried to get the rates feeling the same as my KISS machine, but I just couldn't get it anywhere near the same. So that's why I prefer at the moment running KISS for freestyle.
Yeah.
Have you tried a Betaflight machine and tried the rates on that in comparison to KISS?
When I first started, I run Betaflight, but I haven't run it since, and I can't compare it now. It's been too long.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know. In Raceflight 1 specifically, they've got, I think, 6 different curves now. They've got 2 KISS curves, a BB curve, a Betaflight curve, and a no curve, and another one as well. I forget what it is. So there's a whole bunch of expo curves you can actually choose from there. So I'll be interested to see when you eventually do go to Race Flight 1 whether any of those actually match
up with
KISS.
And it will be, because awesome. That makes such a huge difference to the way the quad flies those different curves.
Oh, definitely, yeah, totally. I couldn't fly prior to the 165, whatever it was, the Race Flight 1, I could not fly it at speed because the expo curve was just way too aggressive.
Yes.
So I'd get past sort of mid stick and then it would be like Acro Plus and just, yeah, it was ridiculous. Awesome up until that point, but yeah. Then they fixed it, added some other curves in. So yeah, I'll be interested to see once you do try it, just to.
Yeah, I'm pretty keen to flesh it with RF1 and try it out, eh? So.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's out in beta now, so you can go grab that from westflight.net. /RF1 beta.
What I was waiting for. I was waiting for it to come out beta because I tried the alpha once and I was like, oh, it's just too much. I'm not keen.
Oh, yeah. The GUI's ridiculously easy now. It's like four wizards and a command and one command line to update your ECs and you're done.
Nice.
Yeah, nice. You don't have to do anything. I'm still playing with it on my Emacs machine. I've got the Emacs 2205S motors and they are just an absolute pig to tune. They're just so intolerant
just so
of any sort of default tuning. It's not even funny.
Those are those ones with like heaps of power, eh?
Yeah. The latest Emacs motors.
They're the new. We've got the most power in a like 50 gram motor or whatever.
Yeah. I mean they're super quick, but even on the, I think it was on 167 build. I had to run a lot lower filtering than I did on my ZMX machines. And I literally went to the Music Point this afternoon to try it on 186, which is a later build. And I came back in after 2 minutes because I noticed that my battery was going down very quickly, even though I wasn't even caning it. I was just cruising around, just feel it out.
Because
they've made some KI changes or integral changes. So it's a lot stiffer. I came in and I literally couldn't hold the battery. It was that hot.
Wow, so it was oscillating and just using all the current or
And I spent about an hour afterwards with KB and the guys to try and figure it out, but it's just not liking it at all at the moment. So I have to work on that. Cool. So let's do a round. Just Hawaii, just quickly, because you didn't actually talk about Hawaii. What and how did you? Well, how and why did you go to Hawaii? Just so people know.
I guess it was one of those things that if I didn't do, I'm kicking myself that I didn't do it, sort of thing. So while I had the opportunity to go, I thought I'd make the most of it and just go and do it. And I'm glad I did because it was lots of fun. Could have done better than I did, but a few technical issues and stuff, but it was great fun.
Yeah, that was for Drone Worlds, right?
Yeah, for Drone Worlds.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, and that's the first time I met you, so. Yeah, no, I was impressed with that, because you did the Aloha Cup, which was the prelim to everything else.
Yep, Aloha Cup, and I ended up coming 11th in that, and they took the top 10 to go through to Worlds, so I was a bit gutted there, but.
Yeah, and you were against the likes of Night Fury, Brain Drain, Bapu. There was a whole bunch of top pilots that didn't qualify in the US that you had to battle through. So that was pretty impressive that you got 11th out of that.
Yeah, I'm still pretty happy with that, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was a solid result. And to be fair, you probably had the best racing out of everyone.
I think we did, eh? Like, we had the most racing. Anyway.
Yeah. It was the most organised and the most racing. Yeah, but anyway, it is what it is. All right, let's do a round the table, and I want to mix the round the table in with a bit of hype this week, so we don't have to bother separating out the hype news. So, who wants to go first?
You go first, Ian, because you know what you're talking
about. All right, okay, all right. So the first thing that let's talk about the Doinker first, because that arrived. So the old Doinker. I tried it with the 1103 motors because what I did is I managed to get some 3S lipos from Quad Junkie, the 500 milliamps, So they arrived and I was able to actually run it properly. Put the 1103 motors on and did not go so well. It was slightly underpowered, and the motors got quite warm on 3S, so don't recommend doing that. So I ordered some 1104 7500 kV motors, the DYS ones. Put those in, and they are significantly better. So,
is your Duenker still 3D printed, or is it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they're only 3D printed. You can't actually get a molded frame of any sort.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know of anyone molding them. There's a V3 Duenker frame out. Yeah. Which
how much does it all weigh, to give some sort of context in case?
I don't know. I've not actually weighed it.
It would be under 100 grams,
like,
eh?
I think it's like 60 grams.
Yeah.
I think it's like 60 grams without a battery.
It's pretty much the smallest sort of brushless tiny whip thing you can get.
Yeah, yeah. It's 82 millimeters.
Yeah.
So you have to either trim props down or buy the Furious FPV ones.
Yeah. I wonder how that'll go against my new brushed quad. That's what I'm going to talk about.
Yeah, see, brushless. I prefer brushless at this point.
Yeah.
I love the Tiny Whoop, and I really like the QX25, but I think brushless is going to be superior.
Yeah.
Have you got anything like that, Phil?
Nah, I've got like a wee Nano QX that I've had for ages, but I never touch it. Always generally go out and fly the real thing, eh?
What? It is the real thing. What are you talking about? Oh, mate. And I think it'll do quite well outside as well. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
But better than that, and something else that I've finally got working, is as part of the prize package from Worlds, I scored some 1306 motors. So I wanted to try and build a 3-inch machine. I've been wanting to try and build one for ages. I've 3D printed a whole bunch of frames, like the skid mark, another custom frame, which is like 110 millimeter, but nothing really worked that well. So I was perusing the old Banggood not too long ago, as you do, see what's new, and RealACC had the QQX 130, which is essentially what it looks like. Is it looks like a QAVX or the RealACC X210. But in a 130 size. So I was like, I know that kind of works. That kind of works. So I'll grab that, chuck it all on.
Buy now.
And away we go. Buy now, free shipping. Yeah. That's a problem. Yeah. So I did that. That arrived and I built it all up. And I'm running a Revolt in it. And it's freaking awesome. It's so good. I was ripping around the garden today. I was ripping around the trees, like in the trees. Because it's so small, it's like a tiny whoop but with way more power. So you're just blasting it in and out of the trees. The tree at Music Point where we usually blast around stuff in.
And there's that little gap.
Yeah, yeah. I was going in and out of that, actually through the trees and in the branch. Yeah, it was awesome. It's not particularly quick, but it handles super awesome. Yeah. And I was getting about 3.5 minutes on it. So it's pretty good.
Not too bad.
Just the tilt. Yeah. I think it'd be quite good for maybe like a warehouse or car parks, that kind of size.
I upgraded the motors in my QX95 and my backyard isn't big enough anymore. For it. Yeah, I did
what
one
motors
touch
did you get?
And they're just like these race star motors from Banggood.
Are they bigger motors or are they?
They're the same size, but the QX95 already uses quite big for brushless motors.
Brushed. Mm. Oh, okay.
I think they're 8.5 millimeters diameter.
Okay. Interesting. We'll have to have some drag races.
Yeah, we will.
Well, winter is almost upon us, so we're probably going to get into car parks soon.
I flew it outside, did a punch out, and I was like, "Oh, I'm really high." Flew it inside, and I accidentally went into the roof. It's really punchy.
Are you used to running the prop guards on it, or have you?
I took them off for the moment.
Okay, that's cool. Sweet. So you got anything else? Any other hype?
Ooh, any other hype? No, not at the moment.
What about the flying fish props? You seen those?
Oh yeah, the flying fish props.
You seen those, Phil?
The blue ones, the blue and black ones.
They're yes, the ones with like the weird patterns
notches.
On them.
Notches. Yeah, the patterns on the notching. Those,
they look pretty crazy.
Yeah.
They look so like the idea behind those is that they keep the prop noise down. That's the whole idea behind them, I believe.
Well,
is that right?
Gareth flew some the other day when I went flying with him, and
oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He says they're like 90% as good as those racecraft angled props, but you
what?
Know, yeah, that's what he said.
What pitch are they?
I don't know. Banana pitch.
They've got a fish on them, and they've got massive cuts out.
And he's saying one of them. There's another style.
They're saying they're 90% as good as a racecraft prop.
They were pretty loud.
Were they?
Yeah, they were pretty loud.
Well, they're supposed to be quieter.
Nah.
Why do you want your props quieter?
But he was using banana ones.
It's supposed to be an efficiency thing.
Right.
I think. I don't know. I'm guessing. That's why they do it. That's why they have the swept tips on the old.
The racecraft props are way quieter if you don't go full throttle.
Yeah, even at full throttle, they're not that loud at full throttle. Yeah, you put 50/40s on there, and they just go. But they don't go anywhere.
There's nothing better than 50/40s on 2600s.
No. Well, the things they don't go anywhere. They just make more noise. Anything past half throttle, they're like.
That's what people want.
Just more noise.
Sounds just cool. give the people what they want, hey.
6-inch, bro. That's where it's at.
Banana props, cool design with no engineering background, just bro science. That's all
how we
want.
Roll. That's how we
all
roll.
Bro science.
Yeah, we've got a fish on them. What you know?
Yeah.
It's gonna be like a fish through the air. I'm keen to try them, and I'm still keen to try those Azure power props properly as well. Matt did say he's got a set for me of the new. Slightly more durable version. Have you seen those, Phil?
No, not those ones. No.
They look pretty red. Got flames and shit on them.
Yeah.
Mm. But they're like a super swept back tip. Like, what, half of the prop is swept back.
Right.
And when I tried them, they felt like, they kind of felt similar to 5040 HQs.
Okay.
But with a bit more speed and less noise.
Right. So, are these props that durable, or are they like nylon material?
No, they're not that durable. Well, the first ones I had were HQ kind of durable ish. I had a little roll in them and they all disintegrated. So that same tumble in it with RKs on, but if I would just roll on and carry on flying.
What are they priced at for a set?
It's a good question, actually. I actually don't know. I'd have to have a look, but I don't think they're super expensive. Might be worth giving them a try just to see what you think.
Hmm.
I don't know whether Lee or Gary's got them in. I know the Flight Club website's got them in. They've got a store, so you can order directly from there.
At the moment, I've got a fairly big box of props sitting here to use, so I'm pretty happy.
With your gem fans.
Gem fan, yeah.
Do they do any... have they updated the 50-50 range or not?
They do a Master Series 50-50 now, so it's the new material.
Still the same prop design, though?
Same prop design, yeah.
Mm.
I did not like the 50-50s when I tried them.
New. I don't think anybody liked the 50-50s other than Tim.
He swore by them, but when I tried
it was like, oh, they're so good, and then you watch it and it's like the machine's the slowest machine out there.
I like my ones, though. The Master Series 50-50s are pretty good, eh? I reckon they'll be a good race prop because they're super strong.
Yeah.
Compared to the 50-40 Master Series. They're alright, but they're just so soft, eh?
You don't want soft props. That's
not
for sure.
Racing.
Nah, you need something that's gonna take a hit and carry on going.
Racecraft. Yeah.
Pretty much. I haven't really found anything else that takes a hit as well as a racecraft prop at the moment. So I'm just going to keep continuing using them. Speaking of which, let's talk about the Te Papa race event.
Yes.
Because that was awesome. So the Te Papa race event was a race. So for those that don't know and that are listening abroad, Te Papa is the museum of New Zealand. Has all the cultural stuff in it. I've never actually been in there.
Seriously?
No, I've never been there. It's in Wellington, man. Why would I go there? So it's the Museum of New Zealand, and they put on, or they put on a, they're putting on like this bug show, where they do a whole bunch of what a bug sees and all that kind of stuff. And as part of that, they invited Red Cross along to put on an event. Now outside the building, obviously, there is a pool or a pond type thing that they drained specifically for the event. And this event cost Te Papa, I think, 30k to put on, so 30,000 New Zealand dollars, which isn't chump change here, especially for the first paid event of New Zealand. For example, the screen, they had a massive spectator screen, which was 10 grand. They gave Red Cross some money as well, which was put towards the timing system, the TBS timing system that we're going to buy, and the pool that we actually raced in, that to fill back up with water is 4 grand. Do you know that?
It's right next to the ocean.
Yeah,
I know, right? just run a hose pipe. What's your problem? Hose pipe and a pump.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was super awesome of them to put on an event, and leading up to the event. So it was 16 people. We'll do a 12. I can't remember. I think it was 16, wasn't it?
I think it was 16.
Yeah, we had 16. A number of those were invited people. So we had like myself and Steve and Phil and a number of the world's teams, a number of the world's pilots as well. So that was all good. And then we had some local people as well fill in the rest of the numbers, which was awesome. Because it was such a... I mean, that's probably the biggest spectator event I've been to in New Zealand. That'd be about right.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
That would be right.
I mean, CRC is about the same size, but not. Not the same because when we don't really race in front of CRC, so.
Yeah, and CRC was more like people were there already, where
yes,
this event was actually attracting people just for the quadcopters.
Yeah, and this is a paid entry as well, so they paid to come in, and then they get to see the bug event, but they also get to sit in the auditorium in front of this huge screen, with a MC and a commentator and all that kind of jazz. So it was ultra cool. Now, leading up to the event, I was pretty concerned on the track, just looking at it. Because this pond area is not a very big area. It's probably a football field long.
If that. And only about 10 meters wide.
Yeah. Basically, the idea was that we fly through this very, very tiny little bush area, up and over a sky bridge twice, and then down to the start. And I was like, okay, well, it's an expo event. I'll make do. But what were your thoughts?
My Either thoughts? Well, it was a really good track just to show the style of racing for a public event, but for an actual racing track and actually holding an event on a track that small, it would work, but it's too small.
What did you think leading up to the event though, of the track when you saw it?
All I thought was, oh, wow, we're definitely going to, the chance of something going wrong is quite high, because you have to keep in mind that the Te Papa Museum is about 10 stories high or whatever, and it's just a huge building on one side, sort of, you know, waterfront and a busy path on the other, and we're just sort of crammed in the middle. There's like a pretty good chance like someone taps a building or taps that overpass bridge that was there. It's like, I'm going to break a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I was just concerned that it wasn't going to be a competitive race. I thought it was going to be, we're going to be hovering around for...
True.
You know, 4 or 5 laps. That's what I thought when I first saw it. I was like, it's not going to be very technical. It's not going to be very challenging. It'll be awesome for the people to watch it.
We definitely did get some good racing in though.
Oh, dude, it was an awesome track. Amazing. Like actually flying it,
yeah,
I completely transformed my opinion of it.
Same.
Like that through the gate into the little tree section. So for those that haven't seen this track, I've got a DVR and there's numerous recordings, which I'll link in the show notes. But essentially, yeah, off the start line, up and over the sky bridge was awesome. There was a real nice kind of corkscrewy flow to it through the gate, and then you go back up and over the sky bridge again to a further gate, and then you come down the straight. And although it was a very small track, we would, you know, it wasn't, well, there were like 10-second laps, if that.
Yeah.
And we did it when we were doing, what, four laps or five laps?
Five laps.
But the racing was super close because everyone was super competitive. We had some really good pilots in there. So the majority of the races were actually super tight, unless somebody took themselves out by hitting a gate or the sky bridge, as
you
did, Phil.
It was the sort of track where you had to be a good pilot to even just be able to complete a lap. And it wasn't like a sort of track where you get a second chance. It was all concrete. It was all steel gates. It was pretty brutal.
Yeah, if you crashed, that was it. You're pretty much done. It was either if you crashed into, because the gates were metal, so they were like the show lighting style girders.
Like scaffolding.
Yeah, like scaffolding, basically. But hit those, and you really wreck your machine. Then there's a massive concrete cliff right in front of you. There's the metal work,
the
sky bridge. Then you got the actual bed of the pond was all massive rocks. So if you get
Then you have Tapapa itself, which was just
a building, a
concrete structure.
So there was not really a lot of room for error in this track. What were your thoughts of the track, Phil? I mean, obviously you got right through to the finals. What were your thoughts on the track, and what was your strategy going into it?
I guess the strategy was just figuring out what was the easiest and fastest way to get around each gate and obstacle. The actual track was really good. At the start, I was just taking it easy and getting the hang of it, trying to get the gates lined up properly and the up and over timed right and whatnot.
Because you were doing something weird. You were power looping it in the practice, but then in the racing, you did a 180 and just flew over the sky bridge.
Yeah, I sort of practiced the power loop in the practice rounds, but I think it was actually slower. Doing a power loop and turning and then going over forwards.
Weird.
Because it's a couple of times I nailed it doing the power loop, and other times I was really high and just waiting to come down, and then just hit the gate. So I just decided to just do a 180 and go over it normally.
Mm. Yeah, watching your footage afterwards, it was definitely a lot slower doing a power loop.
That was cool, though. That was cool.
Oh, yeah, it was cool. Cool as. As a race event, you probably didn't want to waste your practice time doing power loops that you weren't going to do in the race, though.
No.
I had to track down. I was pretty happy anyway. So.
It was a cool track as well, because by the end of it, because I think we were having to do a lot of sort of loops around this bit ridge, and there was a lot of time waiting for you to come down. By the end of it, I was sort of, as I was coming over, I was sort of driving my quad into the ground to sort of make faster laps and stuff like that.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was just driving at the rear gate and then just doing a quick 180 turn in through it. It was cool. I mean, what was your kind of strategy for the event, Stefan? Because again, you got through to the finals.
Yeah, for me, it was just keeping the lines as clean as possible. For me, I guess I really liked that track just because I still felt like I was getting faster laps after doing, say, 50 laps at the end of the event. You know what I mean? You know how sometimes you do a track and you kind of find the limit of the track? Because this was such a technical, small track, there was always sort of room for improvement.
Yeah, I found that, and looking through my DVRs as I went on, I haven't timed the DVRs, but just watching the DVRs, you can definitely see that I get tighter and tighter lines, up until the point that it goes dark, and I think that's where a lot of people fell apart. I know that's where Michael had a lot of issues with his machine, mainly because he couldn't see.
That's the same with my machine too. I ended up flying in black and white. It was horrible.
Yeah. Dude, I couldn't see anything as well. But interesting note, because I got your DVR footage in after the event, and your footage was amazing at night.
#runtime eagle. So I mean, I'm so glad I switched over to that, and I set it specifically to color only.
Yeah. So what camera was that? Because I think I talked over it.
It was a hashtag, Runcam Eagle. Yeah. Now it was awesome. I've switched all my machines over to that.
Yeah.
Like during the day, it was absolutely awesome. Like I handed my goggles around to a few people that hadn't seen me use it with my HD3s, and they were like, "Damn, that's just cheating." Because the dynamic ratio between the dark areas and the light areas, it was just like, it's like flying an HDR camera.
And the resolution
camera.
Is just insane.
Yeah, and I could actually see. So the advantage I had was that I could see further ahead than most people could. I could see the quads. So if I was on the back gate and there was a quad at the flag turning into the first gate, I could see it from all the way back there, so I could say, well, okay, well, I know how far you are, and I could just kind of gain on it if I needed to, or I could back off if it was, because it was top two go through, so I didn't always have to push.
Because I flew your quad with that camera on it before the event, and through the trees when I was flying, it was like you didn't have invisible sort of sticks you normally get. You could see actually everything.
Yeah. That's the dynamic range on it is just insane, and that's why I continue to use it. I think Yong Zi put one on yesterday when we were at Flying Wings. Put one on his quad, and it was the first time he tried it, and he was like, "Oh, it's awesome! It is a significantly better picture."
It was a good advantage for you there, Ian, having that one, that camera, especially when it came to night time and you had your settings right.
Everything stayed sharp where my one, everything sort of ballooned out. Nothing was. Everything became very soft.
I mean, it's not a night camera.
Yeah.
By any stretch. I mean, it was super, super grainy, but I suspect I could probably still see more than what you could.
Yeah.
The other advantage I had was letting you go first. I could follow your light.
Yeah. It was bright enough.
Yeah. It was super bright. So I just did that for the most part. And if you watch my night DVR, I don't think I put up my night. No, I think somebody put up my night DVR.
I put
in the
up
last
your night
race.
DVR.
And you can see me let you go ahead because we had an altercation twice.
Yeah.
So I was like, no, I'm just gonna let him go ahead. So I let you go ahead, and then I just I kind of just followed you around because I knew I could always get you on that first turn into the first gate.
Yeah. See, I was just hoping that because in the past with those super bright LEDs, it's like 20 watts of LEDs on the back of my quad. In the past, it's sort of just blowing out other people's cameras at night, and I was hoping was happening.
Yeah. No, it didn't happen.
No.
And I made one mistake on, I think, the second lap or the first lap, and it put me back by quite a stretch.
Yeah.
So I incrementally caught up, and you can every single lap I gained like probably another half a gate on you, and then I just undercut you on that one corner where I knew I would always get you,
and you got it,
and then you crashed.
Yeah,
because I think it was Scott said afterwards, he goes, I think I put Stefan off because I when you passed him I told him that you'd passed him, and that's when you crashed.
Yeah, damn it. Oh, that crash was insane because I didn't even feel like I thought I was going perfectly with the gate, hit the top.
Oh,
bar.
Really?
Oh, damn, so close to winning.
Yep.
Oh, well.
So close. It was the last lap. It would have been pretty tight, I think.
It would have been
one of us would have crashed pretty heavily. But we had some good battles. I mean, my strategy going into it was just really
consistency.
Pretty much. I mean, I didn't take it too seriously, which probably helped quite a bit because I know some of the guys were getting super nervous, super stressed. Just with the
I guess that also comes down to doing lots of events, because I wasn't nervous either.
No, and it kind of helped that you and I fly quite a bit together.
Yeah.
So when I'm flying with you, it's just like we're just flying, and it's not really a race, which is good.
But Phil, how were your nerves?
Oh, they were good. The first pack that I flew was pretty nervous because I didn't know where I was, that sort of thing. But once you get a few packs down, it was all good. Nerves went away. It was just good fun, good fun fly. It was really good to just hang out with everyone that all the good pilots in New Zealand, one place, have a chat to them,
and it was cool doing all the media interviews as well.
Yeah,
there was on the news and stuff. It was pretty good.
It was also good to talk to the crowd and stuff after racing. We'd go talk to the crowd and all the kids and stuff and sign autographs and stuff like that. So
signed props. Signed props. The way to go. Oh yeah.
I have a 6-inch prop here somewhere of yours, Ian. You might have lost it, did you?
Has it got my name on it?
It does.
There you go. You can keep that, buddy. It's with you. So that's an interesting point. So you mentioned the 6-inch prop there. So I ran a 6-inch quad on that track, a 2300 6-inch quad on that track, which I wouldn't have thought would have worked in any way, shape or form, but it did. So what did you guys run? What was your setup that you ran?
I was just running my 5-inch machine. Yeah.
I was running 5-inch as well, 50/40x3 on 2600 kVs. So it was overpowered for the track, but I was used to it, so I wasn't going to change.
Mm. And how did you find the kind of handling on the track? Was it fine? Was it quite tight, or was it kind of a bit wishy washy? I mean, what was it like flying it?
That was good. The gate that I hated the most on that track was the first gate, where you go through the gate, it's on an angle, and there's that big rock behind it. And especially coming into night time, where you couldn't even see that rock there. You knew it was there, and because of all the laps you'd done earlier on the day, you knew what line to take.
Yeah, a lot of muscle memory at night, eh?
Yeah.
That's what I found as well. And there's a couple of cabbage trees as well that caught some people out as well after that gate. But yeah, I mean, prior to the event, I was going to run two 5-inch machines. Well, I was going to bring two 5-inch machines, just ZMX 2600s, the standard kind of setup with the RKs. But the Race Flight devs had released a new build, which had fixed a few things. This is before the beta, obviously. So I was like, oh, okay, well, I'll flash that on my 6-inch and go down to the park and make sure everything's working. So I went down to the park, and this is at like 7:30 at night. Had a quick blast around, put one pack on the 6-inch machine. Was like, oh my god, this is awesome. I'm going to go flash everything else. So I came back, flashed all my other race machines, went back to the park again. It's getting pretty, starting to get dark at this point. So I put in a pack on my first 5-inch, and that goes pretty well. Doesn't handle quite as well as a 6-inch, but it's enough. And then the second 5-inch machine decides to not work very well at all. So it makes this really odd noises. Not the whistling noises or the screeching noises, but it's like a bad bearing, like a rusty bearing almost, but it wasn't. It was a really odd noise. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to bin that. I took the Eagle out of that, put that in the 6-inch, and then took the 6-inch down to Papa. Got to the Papa. I think I put one pack on my 5-inch, which I didn't really like, and then I put one on the 6, and I found that the 6 was just getting no prop wash anywhere around the track, and it was just following a line like it was on rails. So I was like, I'll just use this and just wing it.
I think the advantage you had with that as well is that thing with those 6-inch props just changes directions and bites. It doesn't do the thing where you sort of, often when you see people racing, they're always overshooting the gates. They're going really quick, but they're overshooting everything. That 6-inch machine isn't super quick, but it doesn't overshoot.
Yeah, you have super tight lines all the way around the track, and I think that's where I made up a lot of my time. Like, it wasn't particularly, I wasn't going particularly quickly. It wasn't, and it also wasn't a handful to fly. Like, I was watching, for example, I was watching you, Phil, and I was also watching Sean Dynamo. And you two have got very similar styles, and I think it's because of the way you acro. You're very on the throttle, off the throttle, on the throttle, off, you know, like, big, you know, you're correcting the attitude of the quad with a lot of throttle all the time.
Mm.
And it's on, off, on, off, on, off, on, off, whereas you watch like Stefan or even Scott Taylor or myself, it's very consistent throttle all the way around. It's enough to get where you're going and control the quad, but it's not so much that it's upsetting the quad.
It's like that small back straight that we had. You could go full throttle, But if you went half throttle, that back corner you could take way tighter, and it would be as fast as going full throttle on the short straight.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. 100%. I've never seen the video, and we're actually quite close, Steve, eh?
Yeah, and I just took the inside line the one time and got you like that.
And I can almost guarantee that that race, Stefan would have been probably under a lot less stress of keeping it online. It's always a lot more work when you're on and off the throttle like that because of the way the quad moves so quickly.
Yeah.
That's what I've always found, and that's why I like the 6-inch on that track. It was just so smooth.
You do less backwards flying because people crash when they do backwards flying.
Yeah, don't do any more backwards flying.
You know what I mean.
Yeah. So I was super impressed. I'm hoping that there's going to be more of these top events, like paid to come and race events. I think Te Papa are more than likely going to put on another one. Because I think they've got all the consents now, so there's no reason why they can't. So that'd be pretty cool.
That'd be really cool.
We're looking forward to that. Is there anything else that you would say could have improved the event anymore? Either anyone?
Better commentary.
I think you need somebody that knows what they're talking about, though, for that.
Yeah, it was... Sometimes we didn't... Sometimes... Like, people that needed to know what was happening didn't know what was happening and couldn't tell the crowd what was happening.
Yeah, you'd almost need the MC out there. I would have also liked to have seen the spectators able to see the track line of sight because they were around the corner. I mean, that's a
could see geography some of the track.
Thing. It would have been... The people at the far end of the track that were on the walkway
okay,
had a much better view of the track. But, where we were, sitting, was an awesome view of the track because you could... I always find that racing is much more fun to watch line of sight than it is on
a live video. I agree with that.
Mainly just because you can see the actual battles going on and see the lines people are taking.
When you have four video feeds on the screen, you can't actually... Or two video feeds, you can't actually follow what's happening.
No, exactly. It's very hard to do. Especially live as well. It's a little bit easier when you've got a video that you can rewind and rewatch it and go, oh, that's where he's taking over. No, I watched this screen. But when it's live, it's just way too fast. I did like the fact that they had the video of the pilot as well in the middle. Yeah. Did you see that? So they had the camera pointing at an actual pilot. I think it was you were on one time, Steve, and Tim was on another. And whoever was sitting nearest to it. I thought that was quite cool. I would have liked to have seen the spectators watch it, be able to see it a bit more.
Because I guess the people watching in the auditorium area, watching the big screen, couldn't actually see what was going on in the pits and where we were flying. Because behind that wall, you see.
Yeah. I think that whole seeing the track, seeing the pilots kind of interaction, rushing around, I think that would be actually quite good for spectators to see, just so that they can kind of follow it a little bit more. I don't know. I mean, it comes down to
the health and safety thing as well. If it was a more open track, we have to put netting and stuff up so they're out of the way.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I don't doubt that played into it somewhat. But it was either way, it was probably the best New Zealand event I've been to.
Well, it runs so smooth as well. We had no issues at all, for the whole day. And I think we actually ended up finishing like 3 minutes before schedule or something.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. And we re-ran the finals three times.
Yeah.
So that was pretty good. Just so people understand what we had going from the organisation side, it was a double elimination. It was heats of four pilots. And the top two pilots would go through, and the bottom two pilots would go to a loser's bracket or a non-qualifiers bracket, so you're first out, and then you would still be able to essentially get to the finals if you won everything after that point, which I think is what you did, wasn't it, Stefan?
Well, I came third once, so I went one bracket down, which just meant I had to do one more race and come top two. Once more than you to get to the finals.
Yeah. So if you won two races or came in top two on two races, you're straight into the finals or the semi-finals bracket.
Yeah.
And what was your path like, Phil?
Well, I kind of only just scraped through, really. After, on the last practice round, the quad that I was flying, my number one quad, I ended up smashing into the walkway at full throttle. So that quad was written off completely for the day. So the first race, I actually had to run my second quad, which I wasn't used to, straight off the bat into racing. So that was a bit hard to get used to that. I had a few issues, but I managed to scrape through, just.
So you got top two in all your races, straight through to the finals?
No, I lost a couple. I crashed out, just wasn't used to the quad. And had to make my way back up again. The hard way.
Yeah, yeah. At least you got more flying in that way, though.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, you learn the track more.
Yeah. So, double elimination, and it was... If you crashed, and I like this rule, if you crashed, it was the position that you crashed on the track. So if us three were racing, if Phil, you crashed first, you would be third. If I then crashed, I would be second. So I thought that worked quite well, and I'd like to see that continued going forward.
Yeah, I would as well.
It just gets
complicated when two people knock each other out of the sky.
Yeah, and then it's whoever lands the furthest, though.
Yeah,
so,
true.
The other thing I really liked about the format was that not only was it double elimination, it wasn't points based. There was no points involved, so you didn't have to really know what your number was until you got to the end. So the final and that was the other good point. So once you got through to the finals, it was best of three in the finals, and that was points. That was cool.
That was a good idea, doing the best of three. That was really good.
Yeah.
Because that really makes it nail-biting, especially between us and Ian, because we both had 16 points, and then it just came down to that final race.
Yep, the final race three times.
Yep.
Oh, I can't believe we started that three times.
That's I can't believe it either.
I'll describe for the people what actually happened. So, the first race I won, and you came second, and I think... You came third, Phil?
Yeah, yep.
And then Michael crashed out because he couldn't see anything. second race, you and Stefan were battling it out for first.
Yeah.
I was just cruising, kind of watching and waiting for one of you to crash because there was Phil no crashed. Way. There was no way you guys were going to keep that pace of five laps in the dark. I was like, joking. So
actually,
I lost
video and smashed into the gate and actually smashed my last quad's camera.
Oh,
in the second race in the final.
Awesome. Don't. So yeah, that happened, and then Stefan was first, and I came second. So me and Steve had both had the same points at that point. Third race came, it was basically whoever won out of, or whoever finished higher out of you and I, wasn't it? That was that was what was going to decide it. So nobody else could win, but whoever finished highest out of Stefan and I, and. On the third lap, you stoved right into the back of me on the back straight.
Yeah.
And I did land further ahead. So technically,
did you know?
I did. Yeah, because I wouldn't have picked up my quad. Yeah, that would be boring. So
yeah.
And Matt was like, "No, we're going to do a rerun showdown." So is that?
So
it was
you
like
technically won it
battle.
Then, but because that was an exciting finish, we went, "Oh, actually, let's do another rerun just between us two."
Yeah, so we had plenty of time as well, so that was good.
Yeah.
And so we went for another rerun.
Then we crashed.
And then we crashed at the gate. So we hit each other into this gate. So whole shot rule, rerun.
Yeah.
So at that point, I was like, oh, let's just get over and done with. So, and that's when I let Steve go and then followed him and took him over the final corner on the final lap.
Damn it.
And that was it. But that was some good battling. And throughout the day, it was super tight racing. There was one race I remember specifically where Michael Douglas was. I think it was Michael, you, Stefan, maybe.
Yeah.
No, it was Ash and it might have been Ash and Scott Taylor, maybe. I forget who it was, but it was like a big seed heat anyway. And every single lap, it was like Maggie because Yongzi was. Was calling me, calling my laps, and he was like Maggie, and it was Michael, Maggie, Michael, Maggie, Michael, and I made a mistake. on the last lap, where I just got a little. I think I tapped the cabbage tree, the rear cabbage tree. I don't know how I did that, but I got way offline, and that put me off going over the flyover bridge. And I boosted it too much, and he just snuck in underneath, and I was like, okay, well, you can have this one.
Yeah. For me, my sort of focus for the event, because you know it's you want to entertain a crowd, so I was just like, don't stove the quad into a gate. So actually, out of all of my races, I only started crashing when I got into the final heat. I finished every single lap pretty much of my racing.
And that's what you want to do, right? I mean, that shows exactly what you need to do in these kind of races, not just for the exhibition side of it, but for races in general. Consistency is going to pay off, and that's why I really like that format, that top two
And having a quad you were familiar with in the final as well.
Yes.
Pretty good.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. That's a big deal. I really needed to pull finger and actually get two of the same quads.
It always starts out as two identical quads, but after like a month, they're different.
Well, I've got two of the identical at the moment, but one of them is just not working properly, and I don't know why. So I might just have to strip it down and see if I can figure it out. But I mean, what's your plans going for the next race? So the next race is Levin, which is apparently going to be a very, 3D heavy track. So there's talk of blasting out through the tree section.
We need to have more 3D style tracks, though. I think they're a lot better.
Yeah, they're way funner.
Yeah.
It's much more interesting, that's for sure. And what I particularly liked, and what made this track, the Tapapa track, very difficult, was the range of 3D that was required, like the height of it, the actual distance. Like that was significantly taller than anything we've put up gate-wise.
It's like two stories high at least, three stories high. And the thing with the 3D stuff is the lines are always different. You never quite know what's going to happen because the position of the quad changes so much. It's
not racing.
Like a 2D race where like, oh, here's a corner, I'm going to go out this much. It's like, oh, I'm taking longer to come down than usual. Oh, this is going to be really quick.
It's also difficult when you're like, you got a quad set up with a specific camera angle for that track, like 35 degrees or whatever. Then you do a big up and over like that and you can't see where you want to go, you know?
Yeah.
It makes it a lot tougher. And that's why Levin's going to be so tough, I think, because you've got not only the paddock area, you've also got the super tight tree area, and then you're going to have to blast out and do some 3D track somewhere else. So I think that's going to be super challenging.
Looking forward to living there. It should be good. First time I've been there.
Yeah. Oh, is it? It's if there's any event that you want to go to on the calendar, then Levin is it.
Cool. I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just Jonathan's awesome.
Hype.
Jonathan's awesome, and he always puts on a great event. Yeah. The track's always really well done because normally people get there early, and we tweak the track accordingly just to make it either flow a bit better or add a gate here or gate there.
It's amazing because Jonathan doesn't really fly mini quads, but he spends 6 months of the year, 8 months of the year preparing a mini quad track for us, which is
it's amazing. Ridiculous. Yeah, and it's become a requirement that you have to go to Levin to race at least once, just because it's so challenging. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not for the faint-hearted. Like, if you're an absolute beginner, you're going to get punished, and expect to get punished, just by the track alone. And then if you're, even as a veteran, once you start getting into the racing, that's when mistakes happen.
I guess that is one of the advantages we actually do have in New Zealand, is that we don't really have any organisation organising it, or we don't have any set rules like overseas where they all have like the same gates or the same flat paddock with just a couple of same similar gates, and it's all pretty similar, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. So what other events have you been to? You've not been to any other events outside of Christchurch, really, have you, Phil?
No, I went to a Geraldine event last year.
For the Nets?
No, that was just a Geraldine Ben, I don't know what it was, but it wasn't the Nats. But this year we're definitely going to Geraldine as well for the Nats. That should be good. And that'll be another track that's going to be have more 3D elements in it.
Yeah, I think they're going to go pretty crazy with it.
Mm. Are you they got LEDs and stuff as well set up, so we can do a bit of light flying.
Yeah, sweet. And they got some big sponsors for lights, which is really good.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I think Geraldine will be like Mavin will be. It's another event that you have to be to experience it, because there's camping on site and there's sorts of shenanigans that go on during the late hours.
I'm not going to be able to make it to Geraldine this time.
I'll be there to represent us.
Yeah, make sure you win it, Steve.
Yeah, as from the our podcast here, I'll bring back all the news.
That's it. No, it'll be good. I think it's going to be an awesome event. I mean, they're working hard to get the track ready, make sure everyone can get picked up from the airport. You know, because it's not just fly in and just arrive.
No.
You've got to, it's an air outside of the airport in Christchurch. But you know, I think it's going to be cool. I'm looking forward to seeing the footage from the event. It's a pity I can't be there, but I've got another holiday to
we
go
won't
on. I
really miss you, if I'm honest.
What? Shut up. No, we'll go next time.
I guess someone else have to come fifth then, Ian.
Hey, mate, it's all about first and fifth, isn't it?
No, that doesn't,
one of the two, I'll take either.
Doesn't count. Wasn't actually a rotocross event.
Just a fun fly, mate. Just a fun fly.
Yeah, just a fun fly.
Yeah, no, nobody took
that
it seriously.
That first doesn't count.
I'm just happy that Chris has nothing to really troll me over, at least until my next event, until Levin. They're like, I even got seventh. Because what I generally do with Levin is that I use it as an experimental run, so I run all experimental stuff for everything. And then
always
this
running
really
experimental stuff.
Mm. The last Levin event, it was a race flight build that had been released that day. props that I'd never used before, the 2.1 lens which I'd never used before, or I'd only been using for like a week or two. I think there was something else that was new as well. But anyway, there was a whole bunch of new gear. I just turned up and was like, kind of works.
Oh, well.
We'll give it a whirl. But yeah, it was good. All right. Well, I think we've gone through a fair amount there.
If you made it listening this far, congratulations.
Yeah, and we'd just like to thank our two sponsors for this episode. The first being Quad Junkie. Don't forget that you guys can get 5% off your next order using the coupon code THEHYPETRAIN. Make sure you put that in. That helps out Quad Junkie, it helps out us as well. And helps out you because you get 5% off, so why wouldn't you use it? And the second one, a big thanks to Raceflight. So if you head over to raceflight.net and head over to the shop and use the coupon code THEHYPETRAIN, you'll get 10% off your order. So you'll be able to get Revolts, ESCs, Orcas, all sorts of stuff.
Those are some seriously sick deals, Ian.
Thanks, Steve. We've worked hard to try and get those. So make sure people use the coupon code so that they know that they've come from the podcast. And then hopefully we'll get some more sponsors on board.
Yeah, big thanks to Fallrider. That'd be great. You get great service from there. Go see them.
Yeah.
are they doing a coupon code, mate?
Just great service, mate. It's great.
Hey, Phil, it's actually Ivy Rotor.
Oh, is it Ivy Rotor? I wasn't too sure.
If you search for Rotor, it's the results only like on the third page or something. But
do you know how long?
Ivy
do you know
Rotor,
how long it took me to realise that it was Phil Rotor? Like, must have been like a year. I thought Ivy Rotor. That's a stupid name for a shop. And then somebody went else for it. It's like, oh, that's what it is.
That's what pretty low coming from you, Ian.
Well, it's not five, is it? It should be
we
five.
We might have to ban you from Ivy Rider.
Oh, probably already banned, mate.
Yeah.
Team Quad Junkie.
I'm sure it is actually Four Rider. I don't know.
Originally, and then everyone sort of caught on to saying Ivy Rider, and just
and it just changed.
Yeah.
Nobody really knows.
It's the same shop.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all good. Is he doing a discount? He's not doing coupons.
Well, you could ask him. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, Stefan's sponsored, aren't you? Stefan, aren't you part of Team Ivy Rotor?
I am sponsored by Ivy Rotor.
There you go. So we've got a team called Junkie. Let's get an Ivy Rotor.
Just put in the hype train. Maybe by the time you put it in, I'll have talked to Lee and he might have done something.
Sweet, there
so
you
the
go.
Hype train.
Give it a whirl, see what happens.
Yeah.
We'll put a link in the bottom there for you.
Yeah.
All right.
You might got a discount, you might not.
Worth a shot. All right. Well, thank you for listening and we'll catch you at the next one. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Nope. See ya.
See ya.